Now, 51551, that's the text. 9 at rte.ie is the email. Richie Sadler is with us this morning because he wants to talk about sex. So let's get down to it, the discussion that is, Richie. Everything is just a double entendre when I was watching your documentary. But anyway.
Good morning and welcome. Thanks for having me.
We hardly need to introduce this. It's psychotherapist, pundit, author, in whichever order you prefer. You have been asking for this overhaul of sex education or schools for a long time. Why is this so important to you?
So I work as a psychotherapist and I work predominantly with teenagers, and in and around 2014 or 15 I started to teach mental health modules in a secondary school not far from here, up in Kilmacud. And when you get teenagers to talk openly about their lives, whether it's one-on-one in my therapy practice or in those classes, the topic of sex and dating and porn and apps and all of that stuff just comes up. Yeah. And I thought, like, this isn't anything new I'm bringing to this conversation. Most of us will observe this. We're not great at knowing how to broach these topics, particularly with teenagers. And in classrooms, it can be tricky for lots of different reasons. Teachers are unsure what they're allowed to say.
Yeah.
They're wary of getting an angry backlash from a parent who might see things very, very different. They mightn't have full support of the board of management. The curriculum is all a bit vague and waffly. So sometimes it's easier, for understandable reasons, for no one to go near this. Parents leave it to school, school leave it to home. The church has an opinion too. And it's
no
just
one's
not
doing it.
It's just not really done in any satisfactory way. So I started to teach sexual health modules then for a few years in school and wrote the book last year. And just the more you kind of delve into this area, everyone more or less will agree, we can do this better. There's a really interesting chat to be had about exactly how you do it, who decides and in what way, what's age appropriate, all of those questions. But we can do it better.
And what's clear is the teenagers want it.
Yeah, that's the thing. And the documentary that's going to be on Thursday, like, this, first of all, this is my first, like, presenting a documentary.
Is it really?
The first time I did anything like this.
And all the issues you've brought to us over the years. Yeah. Always through books, really.
Yeah, this is the first time I've done this. And I really loved it. I really enjoyed doing it. So a lot of the documentary was going around speaking to people. There were politicians and parents and teachers and principals and third level students. But the most interesting bit for me was the bit where I was in the classroom doing various workshops and classes, similar to the kinds of ones I've done in the past, but this time with the cameras present. Mm-hmm. Now, you think of all the obstacles that are in the way to try and recreate the kind of things that you need for a conversation about sex with teenagers to be in place. People need to be comfortable. They need to feel as if they'd be heard or not judged, and everyone needs to feel relaxed and breezy. And then here was me coming in, who they'd never met before.
Yeah.
The actual group of students I met weren't a formed group. They were actually brought in from two separate schools, so they didn't know each other.
They're volunteers.
There was camera crew in the room and there was cameras present.
Yeah.
And the footage was going to be used for this documentary. So there was a lot of things we had to work really, really hard on to make everyone feel really comfortable. But hearing those people speak in the way they do, I think, will be a real eye-opener for a lot of people who watch it.
What do you think is going to be the most surprising thing for viewers watching, particularly the teenagers, what they're talking about, what they want to talk about?
I think just how comfortable and opinionated and articulate young people are when you remove all the awkwardness and all the baggage that us adults bring into the conversation.
Mm.
So we can just free up the room, free up everyone in the room just to ask whatever question, give whatever opinion, suggest any topic, and let's go have a chat about it. I think when you create that environment in a room and you just see how young people respond.
And particularly because they're all on the same pitch together, aren't they? That was the key thing. It's not the awkward conversation at home with the parents. They're all just... They all want, that there's huge appetite for them to discuss this.
It is, yeah. Again, I suppose this is my first document, so I don't know how much detail I'm allowed given this conversation, or am I meant to hold
plenty.
Back certain.
But there's a bit at the start where I
kind of say to them, I said, like, that there's a general feeling in the room of dissatisfaction and disappointment with the education they've received in classrooms up until this point. And I kind of say, okay, well, I'm here now and we're here for several weeks and we've loads of time together. What do you want covered? Which is, first of all, is a question not many teenagers would be used to ask being asked.
No.
And I just put them into little groups and said, have a chat. Come back to me with your lists. And they came back with the various topics. And I said, right, that's what we're going to aim to cover as much as we can, as well as we can, over the next little while.
The kind of overheads that they wanted in sex education was discussions on masturbation,
yep,
pornography, consent and gender issues, LGBT issues, plus the gender issues. I mean, they're the things that make, I'd say, people are already squirming.
Yeah, they are. Actually, when I've had conversations like this off air with various people over the last year, describing the kinds of things I would talk about with the students, people would squirm.
Yeah.
Or when I'd be in schools beforehand and I would tell the teachers I'm about to go in and, you know, do condom demonstrations or whatever, teachers would visibly scream, oh my God, rather you than me. So we have this thing, don't we, about...
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Like, it just comes with an extra layer of awkwardness or difficulty, or we feel vulnerable or we exposed or uncomfortable when it's anything to do with sex.
But these teenagers had no concern. They were not embarrassed. And this is with camera crews inside, yeah, the room.
Because
I was amazed by that.
They were great. Again, they were... It's all about how you... Like, if you're an adult and you go into a room, like, teenagers will pick up straight away if you are uncomfortable, if you're avoiding eye contact, if you're blushing, if you're avoiding topics. And that spreads. You can kind of set the mood by bringing in your own stuff and your own awkwardness. Mm. So if you go in without any of that, that kind of sets the tone. And they always respond really, really positively.
You launched straight into the discussion on masturbation. Mm. How much chat had these teenagers had in schools, in the classroom, about this topic?
The word had never been mentioned. It had never, not even a teacher saying, guys, we're not going to talk about that. They'd never heard the word mentioned in any of the classrooms they'd been in. And so the group I was working with was about 20 transition year students. They were all about 15 or 16 years of age, male and female. So we had a chat at the start about, you know, what have you covered and in what way and what was it like and is it useful and all this kind of stuff. So we weren't there, and I'm really conscious, we weren't there to kind of bash any teacher or be too critical. We were kind of right, well, everyone agrees it's not great with what's there locally, nationally, anywhere. Like, let's work towards having a conversation aimed towards improving it, rather than just finger pointing and saying it's their fault or it's their fault.
And the exercise was finding out what these teenagers knew, because they know quite a lot about sex, but they're not educated about it.
Yeah.
Isn't that the fair way?
There's a difference. Me and you can chat now at length about what it was like when we were 15 and 16. Mm. And there's a lot of things that any generation of teenagers have to grapple with. You're going from being a child to being an adult. It's turbulent. Loads of things will change no matter what decade you were brought up in. But the era now, they all have phones. They all have access to the internet. And that's a huge difference. So using old approaches won't work, particularly in a world which is so different. So we need to come up with new approaches, really, to support
this. Is the
them.
World you're talking about pornography now?
Everything.
What age are they when they see, when a child sees pornography for the first time?
So we did a really interesting kind of discussion, and I kind of had to get them to fill anonymous questionnaires in, because there's certain things when you're dealing with young people, you have a duty of care first of all, and lots of ethical considerations which need to be at the top of the list.
Yes.
But we found a way to kind of get them to disclose what their earliest experiences of being exposed to pornographic material was. And these are 15 and 16 year olds. You watched it, so I know you know the answer, but like the average was around about 10 years of age. And there was quite a few people who'd seen it at the age of 8. And I think that will horrify a lot of parents watching, or a lot of people who are kind of new to this conversation. But it's, if you kind of step back a little bit, like, it's appropriate around about the age of kind of fifth and sixth class to start becoming excited or interested or curious about the changes in your body and sexual development. That's what's meant to happen. That's a sign of healthy development.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, in fifth and sixth class, you have to talk and what happens with your body. So you combine the curiosity, which is normal and healthy, and their excitement, which is also normal, with the fact that they have a phone in their pocket, which is no filters, and they can access what they like.
Mm.
So young people now are getting a lot of messaging around what sex and relationships look like from the porn industry, which is an even more kind of gives even more kind of pressing need to have conversations about how we could do things better in classrooms.
We need to get the education in there before that happens, but it's becoming more and more difficult. People obviously think, well, we've got the firewall on the phone, they're not going to see this and that, but it's the other. They're seeing it from someone else's phone.
Yeah, again, there's a bit of chat about that.
What was interesting is that what they say, how they felt when they saw porn for the first time.
Yeah. Again, I suppose if you're talking about the minds of children here. So if you're 8 or 9 or 10 and you're from you grow up in a household where discussions around sex just don't happen for common sense, age appropriate reasons. And then you see footage of kind of two naked adults, or maybe more than two adults, in a scene where they're performing whatever acts on one another and maybe having a great time. But the words they were using, they were kind of disgusted and confused and kind of weirded out or freaked out or this kind of stuff, which again is understandable. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing was, like, I then followed up and said, well, how many of you had conversations with adults about what you just saw? And it's back to the thing we said before. It's like this thing that, you know, we're not meant to talk about this.
Yeah.
So we don't talk about this. So if kids see something that upsets them somewhere in their head, they go, well, mum and dad, or my parents have never mentioned sex before, so I can't bring it up because sex is just something we don't discuss.
None of them mentioned it?
No.
So it just goes on.
It just goes on in their confused, disturbed little heads. They go, okay, right, this is all a bit weird and this is a bit wrong and I can't talk about this, so I can't get any input or information or guidance or support from any adult about what I've just seen, because again, we don't talk about this stuff.
Desperate, isn't it?
Yeah, but so that's the downside. But I think I prefer to focus on the upside. When you, and again, I think this is the purpose of the documentary, it's just to promote the idea of conversation and to really demonstrate just how much can be achieved in a room when you free up everyone to talk about this, particularly to people who are of an age where they're like sponges. It's like, this is the easiest sell in the world, getting teenagers to be interested in sex.
Yeah. The curiosity is there. The appetite is there for the conversation.
It's an open door. Like there's no resistance, nothing. All you have to do is create the environment or the climate in the room to facilitate it. And I think that's what we can do better, particularly in schools.
What is happening in schools now? Is there any sex education happening at all?
Well, in 2019, it was announced that there would be a review of how RSE, Relationship and Sexuality Education, is delivered in schools. It was around about that time the production company approached me and said, listen, why not let's look into this? Let's see how the review is going to take place and what kind of things might come out of it and who should be a part of it. And in line with that, we'll film you doing your stuff in classrooms. So that was a kind of setup of the documentary. It was delayed because of COVID and other reasons. So we only started filming just before Christmas. And we were led to believe that around about September, the new curriculum for the junior certificate age group is due to be announced or rolled out.
The curriculum is there? Is it there?
As far as I know, maybe something's happened in the last few days. It hasn't been formally delivered to the schools, and there's a few really interesting things that came out from all the people we spoke to in the documentary. The support that teachers really need in this area, it's not really good enough to kind of just, I don't know, send them an email on a Friday and say, listen lads, roll this out on Monday. Like, specific support is needed, because this is a lot of contentious stuff. And a lot of parents, for really understandable reasons, are very protective and guarded about their children, about, you know, who's telling them what and at what age and why. So these are really important questions.
It's fraught, isn't it?
It's fraught. And as well, schools as well, the system we have at the moment in the country, the current curriculum, while it's generally regarded as being insufficient and not fit for purpose, schools are allowed to deliver it in line with the specific ethos or characteristic spirit. I'm not sure what the exact wording is.
Yeah, characteristic spirit, that's it.
Yeah, which is a kind of a... It's a way of being respectful that, for argument's sake, a Catholic school might have a Catholic ethos, so they should be able to deliver a curriculum in line with that ethos, which sounds understandable. But the reality is that it depends on what school your kid goes to as to how much they're being taught.
Yeah.
So if that ethos clause still is in existence and we're happy to keep it there, then it kind of really doesn't matter what's in the curriculum. Schools have license to do what they want.
No, and we should, there's 90% of primary schools still have this Catholic ethos, and it's about half of all the secondary schools in the country. And it's a loaded term, Catholic ethos. isn't it? Because it's like a soft veto, really, on anything that happens on the curriculum. And they've used it very successfully from their own point of view, because sex education has been fairly held back. And it comes back, it's a law from 1998, the characteristic, that is the kind of thing, they can block parts of the curriculum where they believe it doesn't match the characteristic spirit of that school, even though all the schools are entirely funded by taxpayers, by the state. It's a kind of a strange world, isn't it?
Because again, I would come from a view that if you are, if you're a parent and you have a particular ethos or cultural values or religious values, that you should be able to find a school that can support the way you want to bring up your kid. In this area, though, like, it would be great if the Department of Education, the Minister for Education, would have the confidence or the just be able to assert themselves and go, listen, this is what we believe all young people should be taught. We're respectful of individual difference and cultural and religious elements in every household all over the country. But young people living today, the landscape that young people move in is different today than all the different previous eras. Here's what they should be taught. And we're going to be really comprehensive and put a load of thought into how we support teachers and how we deliver that. And then we send it out to all schools and actively support teachers on an ongoing basis to do this as well as we can. Yeah.
There seems to be a fair bit of support for what you're trying to do, not least in the programme for government, where they've kind of dedicated to reforming sex education. I was looking up the Taoiseach, the Taoiseach, the Minister for Higher Education, Simon Harris, Leo Varadkar, Micheál Martin. They're all on the side of saying, you know, state-run schools shouldn't have an ethos that blocks this education. But there isn't, you know, there's still that law sitting there, isn't it, that stops them from doing it. We're in a sort of a strange twilight.
Yeah, but it's like I've friends who teach in Catholic schools, and they're restricted in some of the things they can say because they have to be respectful of the ethos. But also friends who teach in schools who aren't, guided by a particular ethos, and they feel restricted too because the curriculum isn't clear enough on what they can and can't say. So those teachers are fearful of what parents might say. So again, there's a lot of everyone kind of looking over their shoulder, whether it's to the Department of Education, whether it's to their own board of management, whether it's to the church who might own the school, or whether it's to parents who are at home waiting to hear what their son and daughter says when they come home about what was taught in school that day. So that's not conducive, really, to delivering the kind of education that young people really kind of deserve. So if we can somehow get to a place where we can remove all of that and say, right, and it needs to be driven by the department to say, this is what young people should be taught. Mm. We've done a load of review. And five years of it now.
Everyone's opinion.
Yeah. So it's like, surely something should
come out. Time to make a decision. I'm going to pick out a little clip from it. It was kind of something that I end up laughing out loud, but there's always, because there's a sad truth in it. Oh, yeah. And it's when you went to the college, you went to the university, because obviously some topics you couldn't discuss with the 15 and 16 year olds. You're asking the kids what they learned in school.
I did. I went to Maynooth University because, again, for ethical reasons, there's certain conversations which shouldn't really happen with children, and everyone under age 18 is a child. So the third level conversations were richer.
And they're doing great things in university, aren't they? A very, very healthy attitude. Here's a little short clip.
I went to a really Catholic school, and our religion teacher basically told us we shouldn't wear condoms, go on the pill.
You shouldn't?
No.
Okay.
Because it's against God's will.
When did you leave school?
Last year.
that was the line, wasn't it? When did you leave? Because it does sound, that does sound reminiscent of my time in school.
And what did you get? Like, what can you remember? Because I don't have any specific memories of meaningful education in this area. I remember references to certain things, and I remember in the junior cert science curriculum, in the biology section, reproduction was covered. And I remember the science teacher coming in. We might have been in second or third, I don't know what we were in, and he kind of warned us, because obviously, you know, because you go through the textbook page by page, we knew, okay.
Everyone's already done that the first day of school.
Yeah, we're starting, okay, we're going into reproduction, and he kind of came in, and he kind of said, lads, we're going into this now, we don't have any giggling, we need you to be mature, off we go. So this is like warning that, like, we're tiptoeing into areas here that we don't normally discuss, but have a bit of cop on.
So I was in a boys' school. I'm 42 now, so it was mid-90s. So 1997, transition year, all-boys school, a Patrician Brothers school as well. So, you know, Catholic ethos. But we did have a teacher who gave us, I think, 10 minutes of sex education in 1997, a Wednesday afternoon. It was almost like you could specifically remember it. And there was just dead silence in the room. All the giggling, all the messing stopped. Because the curiosity, well, I remember, was absolutely enormous, going, we don't know any of this. We joke about it all day.
Yeah.
We haven't a clue what we're talking about. Now we're finally going to hear about it. But it was kind of done in a fairly raw way. All the romance of a Toyota Land Cruiser hitching onto a horse box.
Really?
And it was very much, this is not a good idea. It's as bad as this and none of yous are into it. But there was a brief mention of gay sex, I remember.
Was there?
Particularly, yeah. So he just obviously broke
mention
the rules.
Just a brief mention or a...
Very brief, and it was kind of, it's, you know, very, very heavy condoms are required because okay. It's a very rigorous version of sex. That's my recollection of it in school. And it sticks with you. But you don't remember?
I don't remember having any kind of anything comprehensive. There would have been references to relationships. Remember, we had a civics teacher who was big on marriage and was big on like sex in marriage only. But there was nothing like the kind of things that's going to be in the documentary where someone just comes in and goes, right, there's a really important, rich, exciting, potentially positive area of your lives. Let's talk about it, and not just to avoid the bad stuff happening to you, but help you and your partners experience the good stuff. So it's not all about red flags and warnings and boundaries. It's about
the fact that you bring up pleasure.
Yeah.
Is itself a contentious area.
Yeah.
Amazingly, isn't it?
So would you have ever, in your upbringing in school, been led to believe that this is an area where you could have experienced pleasure in?
Oh, not at all, no.
Okay, there you go.
No.
Like, God, we can do better, surely, for young people today. Like, I get the, like, what that, the clip you just call out, the, I get the importance of warning teenagers against making mistakes and really promoting the dangers of certain behaviours and activities. That's required in a lot of teenagers' lives.
And they did want this. They wanted discussions about STIs, didn't
everything.
They?
Yeah. There was nothing they didn't want to learn about. Because they all have phones now. So if there is any information a young person wants, they can take their phone out, press a button, and they'll find it. But what I think education now can do and really, really effectively do well is to support them with decision making and kind of going beyond just simply reading out definitions on a phone, just imagining themselves in certain scenarios, bringing stuff from the classroom into the real world and back again.
And that's where you get to talk about consent and all those matters. We know there's evidence that if you do educate the children properly about sex, it has positive benefits for the whole of society. You went to the Netherlands.
I did, yeah. That was one of the things I did. It was actually really crammed schedule for me because this all kind of happened in and around the Qatar World Cup.
Oh, right.
So I was like the 64 matches in a month, or to cover them all. I was on loads of them. When you're not on them, you're meant to be watching the ones you're not on. And then occasionally there's a day where there's no matches, and then I'd be organising filming days out with the students and with the teenagers. And on some days, this all happened on the same day. But in it all, we kind of had an overnight trip to the Netherlands. And it was really interesting because, you know, you think of Netherlands, you think of maybe the red light district, or you think of they must be really open and liberal. But liberal, the people I spoke to, like, they've changed a lot over the last, I spoke to someone in their 40s and someone in their 30s and younger people. Yeah. And they all have different experiences. But just I was in a room with people who were just talking openly and comfortably, and a real noticeable lack of judging themselves or each other for having opinions or experiences in this area. So that was really useful to hear what they were doing. Because we can be very bit into, like, comparing ourselves to what was 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Like, it's no harm to lift our head up and get off the island and go, well, how's it being done elsewhere?
Exactly. And the health rates, basically, in there, tell us about those in the Netherlands.
In relation to...
They have the lowest rate, don't they, of teenage pregnancies in the world and a fall in STIs.
Yeah.
And we have the opposite at the moment.
Like, so if you were...
In terms of STIs.
Yeah, so if you were to compare this, and this is what I do with teenagers all the time. Do you remember in COVID? Do you remember in a really matter-of-fact, helpful way, We talked about the fact that there's infections which spread among the human population. There's certain behaviours which you can engage in which will put you at increased risk. There's other behaviours you can engage in which can mitigate those risks. But we didn't tell her, ourselves to sit in a room on our own and interact with nobody. We said, here's what you can do. Wear a mask. Maybe stay 2 metres apart, blah, blah, blah. So it's the same in the world of sex. You go, lads, here's infections, and you explain what they are and what the symptoms are. Here's how they're spread. Here's the things you can do to prevent yourself and your partners from catching them. Now off you go. Yeah. Go and live.
Yeah.
Like, and that's, whereas in previous times, I think we were reluctant to talk to young people about this stuff because if there was a fear that maybe we'd be encouraging them to be active sexually, or that we'd be promoting the idea of sex as a pleasurable, positive thing. Because there was a lot of people who, and a lot of people still do, believe that it's purely to procreate or best kept for your spouse. But that's not in line with how the vast majority of people in the country live. So our approaches need to change in line with that.
What are the views of the campaigners you spoke to, and you do in the documentary, who have different views on how sex education should be taught? Do they at least agree that it needs to improve?
I didn't meet anyone who said what is there at the moment is fit for purpose. Yeah, to answer your question, there was consensus among everyone I spoke to of all ages that this can be done better and it can be done differently. And then the little differences, point of differences then about how you might achieve it or like who decides? Who decides what 16-year-olds should be taught? Is it the Minister for Education? Is it their parents? I spoke to one politician who was a strong believer that the parents are the one who decides. And the obvious response to that is, yeah, but I work with loads of families and the parents within a family don't agree.
Yeah, yeah.
You could sit down with a school of 25 students who might have up to whatever, two parents each. That's a lot of people. And I bet you won't get consensus among the parents of those students. So I think...
You can't have the committee all the time deciding bit by bit. We've loads of messages on this. Someone says, I was on my local parents' council in the early 90s when the Stay Safe programme was being introduced. The principal of the school was horrified that this would have to be discussed in her school. All these years on, it seems we haven't moved on a whole lot. That's in from Mary. Someone says, when I was in a school, a sex education person came into her school from outside. It was a much better way to do it than your teacher doing it. The one who teaches you maths or English or your foreign relationship suddenly starts talking about condoms and periods mostly doesn't work. An outsider coming in is the way to go, says Steve. You're all for that, I think.
Well, I friends, again, with a lot of people who are teachers and they're really comfortable doing this and they're excellent at it and they're fully supported by their school to do it really comprehensively in a really modern way. So I'd be really reluctant to say, you know, you've got to outsource this. But there is a lot of kind of teachers and students I've spoke to who can see the benefit in it being somebody from outside the school coming in. But I think we should aim to that if that's the measure, that's just a short term one. Why not empower teachers to do it?
Yeah.
Like, why do we think that teachers wouldn't be able to do this or students wouldn't be able to learn from their teachers? Like, the teachers are best placed to teach. They're the ones who do this for a living.
Yeah.
So I don't think at all we should be working towards a scenario where we exclude them from the delivery of this. They're central to it.
And they're constantly being trained and updated on other bits of the curriculum. So this is just another part of it.
Yeah,
but
specific to this isn't like other classroom scenarios where you can just be given a certain topics and told, listen, just be a bit creative about how you bring it up. Resources are needed and specific guidance is required because teachers in many cases feel vulnerable and unsupported. So there's a wariness or a reluctance or a fear in the classroom that if certain topics get brought up, that if they don't have clear guidance, they'll, for self-preservation reasons, they will keep the topics out.
Because there'll be a letter in from someone.
There'll be something from somewhere.
Incidentally, the students you chose for this documentary are from two different schools in Kildare.
In Maynooth, yeah. So there's two schools which are right beside each other in Maynooth Education Campus. And we kind of sent out and said, listen, this is what we're doing. Any volunteers? We need around 20. We got around 20, male and female. Some of them hadn't met each other before, had never been in the classrooms together
amazing,
before. And some of them did. And so on day one, a lot of them hadn't met each other. None of them had met me. They were there to talk about a topic that they hadn't spoken about before in front of a camera crew for the purposes of a documentary.
Were they non-denominational schools? Are they any? Is there any religious ethos attached at all?
Oh, God, I really should know the answer for that.
I don't think so. I was looking out for crosses and the saints and things like that. I don't think so. I was wondering, was that on purpose? Would it have been difficult to get a
The two principles connected of the two schools were really, really supportive, and they both feature in the documentary. Yeah. I speak to them at some point, and they're really supportive of not only the conversation around how we could improve this, but they were really supportive of the idea. And I think this is central, that young people's voice have got to be a real centrepiece in this conversation. Mm-hmm. If it's just all elfless like me and you sitting there going on about what was in our day, that's a missed opportunity.
No.
It just is.
I'll go to some other messages here. What is wrong with Irish adults that we find it so hard to talk to our kids about sex? We pretend to be so cool about everything in the new liberated Ireland, but in fact we're still uncomfortable about even the most basic normal aspects of sex. That's in from Pat. Someone says, I'm a retired secondary school teacher, parent, grandmother. I'm delighted to hear about Richard's work. It's way past time for sex education to be dealt with openly and honestly. For far too long, our students have been shortchanged in this area. That's from Claire in Clare. Calling you Richard as well.
Yes, my mother does that still.
That's a proper teacher, but thanks for that message. I agree with the huge need for proper relationships and sex education. What is absolutely necessary to deliver an effective and meaningful programme are smaller groups than present class sizes, which are 23, 30. TYO classes are smaller and more appropriate sizes. Also, proper ongoing training of teachers and those involved in this area of education. It shouldn't be just timetable fillers. Well, it isn't really. And I mean, this is something we should say the government has moved on. The review has happened. We've had 5 years of it now. They've heard everyone's view. You're kind of, are you sort of the view now, let's just hear what they're going to do? And
yeah, I think we're really interested now to see what the new curriculum will look like, what specific training and ongoing support will be there for the teachers to roll it out. What topics will be in it? What are the approaches to the topic? And how are they distinguishing between what a 13-year-old should be taught and what a 18-year-old should be taught, because they live in very, very different worlds. How are they going to approach the ethos question? Will their approach be that all young people get the same education, or will they leave it up to schools to do it themselves? So all of this kind of thing will be really interesting to see, because up until now...
Well, are you in favour of removing the ethos question? Let's just be frank about it.
I think there is certain information and guidance that all young people should receive. I really do. Mm. And I think you can do that in line with promoting a certain ethos or having religious or cultural values in a school. But I think to deny young people access to information or guidance or support or education in this area because it's an affront to your religious beliefs, I think is failing young people.
And we should say that if someone feels no, they don't want their kids taught this, they have a constitutional right
absolutely
to have them opt out of that particular class and they don't want to hear about it.
I think that's in the constitution at the moment. I think the parents are, I hope I'm right, I think the parents are the primary educator in the life of their children, that would
generally be no problem if someone says I don't want because there's going to be a Christian and other faiths as well. We should point out there are a few other religious institutions that don't want
but it's to, and I hope this comes out from the documentary, like it's to see how young people respond when you go at it from a completely different angle. Where you go in and say, what do you want to learn about? Grand. Get in little groups there and talk about it. What questions do you want addressed? What opinions do you have that you haven't shared elsewhere that you want to find out? Are they right or wrong? Or you want to test them out? And a lot of the times you're facilitating a discussion among young people and they're learning from one another.
Yeah. And that was a huge thing.
You kind of sit there and they change one another's minds and they hear views that they haven't heard before because if you take a step back, these are not conversations that are ever had. So young people just have these half baked opinions, or they might have saw something on social media or be influenced by something they saw or heard by somebody online, and they just take it on as, well, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and that was interesting. Fact. Even in the small group you had one fella who said he's already talked about masturbation with his parents, and they said, look, it's a perfectly natural thing. Go off and enjoy yourself.
Just privately.
Yeah, privately. That's right, do it privately. And then you had a girl who said, I would never discuss this in a million years with my parents. But she was totally comfortable doing it in school in front of a camera.
Exactly.
So it's in the group, isn't it, of like-minded
exactly. And as well, even apart from what the topics are that are being discussed, what you're doing is you're giving young people their first experiences in speaking openly and breezily and comfortably about these topics with one another, so that when the class ends, those conversations will continue. And you're just kind of setting young people in a direction that those of us when we were young weren't.
Yeah.
That where you kind of go, that's just whatever questions you have, just bounce
it's really
them off
good.
One another.
And I think it's really important television. Let's talk about sex. It's on RTE2 on Thursday night at 10:15. It's actually falling in a nice place right after the France match.
It is. I'm on the panel for the France game on Thursday, so there's
double
way too much telly, way too much of me on TV this Thursday. But yeah, that's the way
it is. Is that going to go terribly badly?
It's going to be very, very difficult for us to get a positive result from that one.
And then we're playing your favourite place, Netherlands.
The Netherlands on Sunday later. Back in Dublin. So a little bit more hopeful for that. But again, they are a very, very difficult opponent.
Thank God for the Rugby World Cup. Take the edge off. Listen, it is an amazing subject. There's loads of great perspectives coming in. Richie Sadler, let's talk about sex. You've started the conversation a long time ago. I think you've been banging on about banging, basically. Is that the kind of theme for a couple of years? Thanks a million for coming in. Congratulations on the doc.
Thank you very much.
We have to go to an ad break.